in, for those who don't know who we are.
Sorry.
I'm Jan Nairn, and...
I'm Robert Nairn.
And we currently live in Clearwater, Minnesota, but recently moved there from Southern California. I have been in a parish for, two different parishes for 12 years in Southern California. And Robert had been appearing for, I think, 10 out of 12 years, wasn't it, at the Shakespeare Festival that takes place each year at Cal Lutheran. How many of you have from that area been to the Shakespeare Festival? Good, good. Right. So, that's who we are. We met long ago in New Zealand. We first dated during the production of The Wizard of Oz. I was Dorothy, and...
I was a wizard.
Everybody said it changed the whole story. Anyway, so that's who we are. And this little piece we're going to do tonight was put together in its current form here at Holden Village about 20 years ago when friends of ours, who are still people who come to the village regularly, Carl and Sally Comer, some of you may know them, yes, it was their wedding anniversary. I don't know, it might have been 25th or something. I wouldn't guarantee that. And Robert told them that, huh?
I think that they had their 50th.
They've had their 50th, so it might have been their 30th. Yeah, because it was 20 years ago. Their 30th wedding anniversary. And Robert told them I was working on this piece, and they insisted they had to have it for their wedding anniversary, and that gave me a deadline. Otherwise, it would have never come together. Because this piece does not appear in print, as you will be hearing it tonight. It is based on two short stories by Mark Twain that were written respectively in about 1893 and the second one written in 1904. So two different short stories which I have interspersed together as a kind of a dialogue reading. Mark Twain, this incidentally is the 100th anniversary of the death of Mark Twain last April. And we heard from somebody who was in the village earlier this week that Mark Twain wrote an autobiography which he said could not be published until 100 years after his death. So we look forward to the release of that and later on this year. But in any case, as you all know, in the second half of the 19th century, Mark Twain was an international celebrity for his writing and also for his lecture tours. He had married for love and had four children. His only son died in infancy. In the years of his fame, he managed to make a fortune two or three times and to lose it. In the process of losing it, one of the times he also lost a home that he had built, and that was the one that he mainly lived in those happy years with his family. And he looked back on this as his Eden. And this story of Adam and Eve is set not in ancient Mesopotamia, but in that home in Connecticut. And the geographical references in this were to that region of the United States. So I have taken the liberty of changing the geographical references to Holden Village. So stand by for those. The other thing to note is that while the diaries are of Adam and Eve in their youth in the garden and immediately thereafter, Mark Twain was looking back from age at the ideal time of his life that he had shared with his wife. By 1904, his wife had died, and also one of their daughters. Only one daughter survived him. And like many humorist and wit, Mark Twain did tend to become a little satirical, shall we say, in his older years. And the first one, written in 1893, reflects a kind of an edgy wit and basically describes the battle of the sexes. The second part, you will notice parts of this that have a very different tone, and they're the part where he is looking back at his married life. So two different kinds of tones in these
stories.
Anything else I haven't mentioned?
Can't take it, man.
We sort of dressed to suggest the turn of the century, but in any case. Right. So the Diaries of Adam and Eve by Mark Twain.
You want me to read this?
Yes, Robert will read
this
the text.
This is not by Mark Twain?
No.
I think actually Terry wrote it. From Genesis. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to till it and keep it. And the Lord God commanded the man, you may freely eat of every tree of the garden, but of the tree of knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat. For in the day that you eat of it, you shall die. Then the Lord God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helper as his partner. So out of the ground the Lord God formed every animal of the field and every bird of the air and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called every living creature, that was its name. The man gave names to all cattle and to the birds of the air and to every animal of the field. But for the man there was not found a helper as his partner. So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and he slept. Then he took one of his ribs and closed up its place with flesh. And the rib that the Lord God had taken from the man he made into a woman and brought her to the man. Then the man said, this at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. This one shall be called woman. For out of man, this one was taken.
Tuesday. I am almost a whole day old now. I arrived yesterday. That is, as it seems to me. And it must be so. For if there was a day before yesterday, I was not there when it happened, or I should remember it. It could be, of course, that it did happen, and that I wasn't noticing. Very well. I will be very watchful now, and if any day before yesterday's happen, I'll make a note of it. It will be best to start right and not let the record get confused, for some instinct tells me that these details are going to be important to historians one day.
Tuesday, this new creature is a good deal in the way. It is always hanging around and following me about.
The other creature around yesterday afternoon. I followed it at a distance to see what it might be for, if I could, but I was not able to make it out. I think it is a man. I have never seen a man, but it looked like one, and I feel sure that that is what it is. I realize I feel more curiosity about it than I do about the other reptiles. I was afraid of it at first, but it started to run every time I turned around, and I thought it was going to chase me. But by and by, I found that it was only trying to get away. So after that, I was not timid anymore, but tracked it along several hours about 20 yards behind, which made it nervous and unhappy. Mm-hmm. But at last, it was a good deal worried and climbed a tree. I waited a good while and then gave up and went home.
Saturday. I do not like this. I am not used to company. I wish it would stay with the other animals.
Sunday. It is still in that tree, resting apparently, but that is a subterfuge. Sunday isn't the day of rest. Saturday is appointed for that. It looks to me like a creature that is more interested in resting than anything else. It would tire me to rest so much. I do wonder what it's for. I never see it do anything. It has low taste and is not kind. When I went there yesterday evening, it had crept down and was trying to catch the little speckled fish that play in the pool. And I had to claw at one to make it go up the tree again and leave them alone. One of the claws hit it behind the ear, and it used language. That gave me a thrill. It was the first time I had heard speech except my own. I didn't understand the words, but they seemed expressive. When I found out that it could talk, I felt a new interest in it, for I love to talk. I I talk all day and in my sleep too, for I am very interesting. If I had another to talk to, I could be twice as interesting and would never stop if desired.
Sunday, pulled through. Monday, cloudy today, think it may rain. Wind in the east, think we shall have rain. We? Where did I get that word? Oh, I remember now, the new creature uses it.
Next week, Sunday, all week I tagged around after him and tried to get acquainted. I had to do all the talking because he was shy, but I didn't mind. He seemed pleased to have me around, and I used the sociable we a great deal, because it seemed to flatter him to be included.
Monday, been examining the great waterfall. It is the finest thing in the estate, I think. The new creature calls it 10 Mile Falls. Why, I'm sure I don't know. Says it looks like 10 Mile Falls. That is not a reason, it is mere waywardness and imbecility.
Tuesday, we are getting along very well now, and getting better and better acquainted. He does not try to avoid me anymore, which is a good sign and shows that he likes to have me with him, and that pleases me. And I try to be useful to him in every way that I can, so as to increase his regard. During the last day or two, I have taken all of the work of naming things off of his hands. And this has been a great relief to him, for he has no gift in that line, and is evidently very grateful.
Wednesday, I get no chance to name anything myself. The new creature names everything that comes along before I can get in a protest, and always the same pretext is offered. It looks like the thing. There's the dodo, for instance. It says the moment one looks at it, one sees at a glance that it looks like a dodo. It will have to keep that name, no doubt. Oh, it wearies me to fret about it, and it does no good anyway. A dodo. It looks no more like a dodo than I do.
Wednesday. He can't think of a rational name to save him. But I do not let him see that I'm aware of the defect. Whenever a new creature comes along, I name it before he has a chance to expose himself by an awkward silence. In this way, I have saved him many embarrassments. I have no defect like his. The minute I set eyes on an animal, I know precisely what it is. The right name just comes out instantly, just as if it were an inspiration, which no doubt it is. For I'm sure it wasn't in me half a minute before. When the dodo came along, he thought it was a wild cat.
Thursday, built me a shelter against the rain, but could not have it to myself in peace. The new creature intruded. When I tried to put it out, it shed tears and wiped them away with the back of its paws and made a noise such as the other animals make when they're in distress. I wish it would not talk. It is always talking. That sounds like a cheap fling at the creature, a slur, but I do not mean it to be so. I have never heard the human voice before, and any new and strange sound intruding itself upon the solemn hush of these dreaming solitudes offends my ear and seems a false note. And this new sound is so close to me. It's right at my shoulder, right at my ear, first on one side, then on the other. I'm used to sounds only that are more or less distant from me.
Thursday, my first sorrow. Yesterday, he avoided me and seemed to wish that I would not talk to him. I could not believe it. I thought there must be some mistake, for I loved to be with him and loved to hear him talk. So how could it be that he would be unkind toward me when I haven't done anything? But at last it seemed to be true. So I went away and sat lonely in the place where I first saw him on the morning that we were made. And I didn't know what he was and was indifferent to him. But now it was a mournful place, and every little thing spoke of him. And my heart was very sore. I did not know why very clearly, for it was a new feeling, and I had not experienced it before.
The naming goes recklessly on in spite of anything I can do. I had a very good name for the estate, and it was musical and pretty. Garden of Eden. Privately, I continue to call it that, but not any longer publicly. The new creature says it is all wood and scenery and rocks, and therefore has no resemblance to a garden. Says it looks like a park, and does not look like anything but a park. Consequently, without consulting me, it has been new named North Cascades National Park. This is sufficiently high-handed, it seems to me. And already there is a sign up. Please do not step on the baby grass. My life is not as happy as it used to be.
Friday, when night came, I could not bear the loneliness and went to the new shelter that he had built to ask him what I had done and what was wrong and how I could mend it and get back in his kindness again. But he put me out in the rain.
Saturday. The new creature eats too much fruit. We're going to run short, most likely. We again. Oh, that is its word. Mine too, now, from hearing it so much. Good deal of fog this morning. I do not go out in the fog myself. Oh, the new creature does. It goes out in all weathers and stomps right in with its muddy feet and talks and talks and talks. It used to be so quiet and pleasant here.
Sunday. It's pleasant again now, and I am happy. But those were heavy days, and I don't think about them when I can help it. I tried to get him some apples, but I'm left-handed and can't learn to throw straight. I failed, but I think the good intention pleased him. Apples are forbidden, and he says I will come to harm. But so I should come to harm through pleasing him. Why should I care for that harm?
Sunday, hold through. This day is getting more and more tiring, trying. It was select and set apart last November as a day of rest. I already had six of them before. This morning I found a new creature trying to clod apples out of the forbidden tree.
Monday. This morning I told him my name, hoping it would interest him. But he did not care for it. It is strange. If he should tell me his name, I would care. I think it would be pleasanter in my ears than any other sound. He talks very little. Perhaps it's because he's not bright and is sensitive and wants to hide it.
Monday, the new creature says its name is Eve. That's all right. I have no objections. Says it is to call it by when it wants it to come. I said it was superfluous then. The word evidently raised me in her respects, and indeed, it is a large and a good word, and will bear repetition. Superfluous. It says it is not an it is a she. This is probably doubtful, yet it's all one to me. What she is were nothing to me if she would go by herself and...
Monday evening, although he talks so little, he has quite a considerable vocabulary. This morning he used a surprisingly good word. He evidently recognized it himself and worked it in several times afterwards casually. It was not good casual art, but still... It shows that he possesses a certain quality in perception, and without doubt this could be made to grow if cultivated. Where did he get that word? I don't think I've ever used it.
Sunday, pull through.
Sunday, no, he takes no interest. I try to hide my disappointment. I suppose I don't succeed.
Monday. I believe I see what the week is for. It's to give time to rest up for the weariness of Sunday. It seems a good idea. She has been climbing that tree again, clodded her out of it. She said nobody was looking. Seems to consider that a sufficient justification for chancing any dangerous thing. Don't know that. The word justification moved her admiration and envy too, I thought. And it is a good word, justification. She told me she was made out of a rib taken from my body. This is at least doubtful, if not more that. I've not missed any ribs.
Friday, today I went away and sat on the moss bank with my feet in the water. It's where I go when I hunger for companionship. Someone to look at, someone to talk to. It's not enough, that white body painted there in the pool, but it is something, and something is better than utter loneliness. Once, I thought she had gone away, and I was inconsolable. I hid my face in my hands, and then when I took them away again, there she was. I sprang into her arms. She is my comfort and my refuge when life is hard. And it is mainly that.
Saturday. She fell in the pond yesterday when she was looking at herself. Which she's always doing. She nearly strangled and said it was most uncomfortable. This made her sorry for the creatures which live in there, which she calls fish. For she continues to fasten names onto things that don't eat them and don't come when they're called by them, which is a matter of no consequence to her. She is such a numbskull anyway. So she got a lot of them out, the fish, and brought them in last night and put them in my bed to keep warm. But I've noticed them now and then, all day. And I don't see that they're any happier there than they were before, only quieter. When night comes, I shall throw them out of doors. I will not sleep with them again, for I find them clammy and unpleasant to lie among when the person hasn't anything on. Sunday, pulled through.
Tuesday, all the morning I was at work improving the estate, and I purposely kept away from him and hoped he would come and find me. But he didn't.
Tuesday. She has littered the whole estate with execrable names and offensive signs. This way to the hike house. This way to the post office. Orientation this way. She says this location would make a tidy retreat center if there was any custom for it. Retreat center. Another invention of hers. Just words. Words without any meaning. What is a retreat center? But it's best not to ask her, for she has such a rage for explaining.
Tuesday evening, I stopped for the day and took my recreation by flitting about with the bees and the butterflies and reveling in the flowers. Those beautiful creatures that catch the smile of God out of the sky and preserve it. I gathered them and made them into wreaths and garlands and clothed myself in them while I ate lunch. Then I sat in the shade and wished and waited, but he did not come. But no matter, nothing would have come of it. He does not care for flowers. He calls them rubbish and can't tell one from the other and thinks it superior to feel that way. He does not care for me. He does not care for flowers. He does not care for the painted sky at eventide. Is there anything he does care for? Oh, except building shacks to coop himself up from the good, clean rain, and thumping the melons, and sampling the grapes, and fingering the fruit on the trees to see how his properties are coming along.
Tuesday evening. Perhaps I ought to remember she is very young, and a mere girl, and make allowances. She is all interest, eagerness, and vivacity. The world is to her a wonder, a charm, a mystery, and a joy. She can't speak for delight when she finds a new flower. Oh, and she is color mad. Brown rocks, yellow sand, gray moss, green foliage, and blue sky. The peril of the dawn, the purple shadow on the mountains. None of them is of any practical value so far as I can see, but because they have color and majesty, that is enough for her, and she loses her mind over them.
Thursday, I saw him for a moment again at nightfall, but only for a moment. I was hoping he would praise me for trying to improve the estate, for I had meant well and worked hard. But he was not pleased, and turned away and left me.
Thursday, she has taken to beseeching me to stop going over the falls. What harm does it do? Says it makes her shudder. I wonder why. I've always done it, always liked the plunge and the coolness. I supposed it was what the falls were for. They have no other use that I can see, and they must have been made for something. She says they were only made for scenery, like the rhinoceros and the mastodon.
He was also displeased with me on another account. I had tried once more to persuade him to stop going over the falls. That was because I have discovered a new passion, quite new and distinctly different from all, from love and grief and all of the others that I had already discovered. Fear, and it's horrible. I wish I had never discovered it. It gives me dark moments. It spoils my happiness. It makes me shiver and tremble and shudder.
Went over the falls in a barrel. Not satisfactory to her. Went over in a tub. Still not satisfactory. Swam the whirlpool in the rapids in a fig leaf suit. It got much damaged. Things, tedious complaints about my extravagance.
I could not persuade him. He has not discovered fear yet, and so he just didn't understand me.
Sunday. Pull through. Monday. I am too much hampered here. What I need is a change of scene.
Monday. Tuesday. Wednesday. Thursday. And today, all without seeing him. It's a long time to be alone. Still, it is better to be alone than unwelcomed.
Thursday, I escaped last Monday. I traveled 2 days and built me another shelter in a secluded spot and obliterated my tracks as best I could.
Friday, I have to have company. I was made for it, I think. So, I made friends with the animals, and they are just charming. They have the kindest disposition and the politest ways. They never look sour. They never make you feel that you're intruding. They smile at you and wag their tail if they've got one, and they're always ready for a romp or an excursion or anything you want to propose. I think they are perfect gentlemen. All these days I have had such good times, and it hasn't been lonesome. No, I should say not. Why, there's always a swarm of them around. Sometimes there's 4 or 5 acres of them.
Friday, if there is anything on the planet that she is not interested in, it is not on my list. There are animals I am indifferent to, but it's not so with her. She has no discrimination. She takes to all of them. She thinks they are all treasures. Every new one is welcome. When the mighty Brontosaurus came striding into camp, she regarded it as an acquisition. I considered it a calamity. This is a good example of the lack of harmony that prevails in our view of things. She wanted to domesticate it, and I wanted to make it a present of the homestead and move out. She believed it could be tamed by kind treatment and would make a good pet. I said a pet 21 feet high and 84 feet long would be no proper thing to have about the place, because even with the best of intentions, without meaning any harm, it could sit on the house and mash it. For anyone could see by the look in its eye that it was absent-minded.
Saturday, I have made long excursions with the animals and have seen a great deal of the world. Almost all of it, I think. So, I am the first traveler and the only one.
Saturday, she hunted me out by means of a beast, which she has tamed and called a dog, and came making that pitiful noise again and shed tears. I was obliged to return with her, but will presently emigrate again when the occasion offers.
The birds and the animals are all friendly to each other, and there's no disputes about They all talk, and they all talk to me, but it must be a foreign language because I can't make out a word they say. Yet, they often understand me when I talk to them, particularly the dog. It makes me ashamed. It shows that they're brighter than I am and therefore my superiors. I have learned a number of things and am educated now, but I wasn't at first. I was ignorant at first.
She engages herself in many foolish things, among others to study why the animals called lions and tigers live on grass and flowers, when she says the sort of teeth they wear would indicate that they were intended to eat each other. This is foolish because it would mean to kill each other and would introduce what, as I understand, is called death. And death, as I have been told, had not yet entered the park. Which is a pity on some accounts.
Some things you can't find out. But you will never know you can't by guessing and supposing. No, you have to be patient and go on experimenting until you find out that you can't find out. And it's delightful to have it that way. It makes the world so interesting. If there wasn't anything to find out, it would be dull. Even trying to find out and not finding out is just as interesting as trying to find out and finding out. And I don't know, but more so.
Nothing ever satisfies her but experimentation. Untested theories are not in her line, and she will not have them. It's the right spirit, I concede. It attracts me, and I feel the influence of it. If I were with her more often, I think I should take it up myself.
By watching, I know that the stars are not going to last. I've seen some of the best ones melt and run down the sky. I mean to stay up every night for as long as I can.
If she could quiet down and keep still a couple of minutes at a time, it would be a reposeful spectacle. In that case, I think I could enjoy looking at her. Indeed, I'm sure I could. For I'm coming to realize that she is a quite remarkably comely creature. Lithe, slender, trim, rounded, shapely, nimble, graceful. And once when she was standing marble white and sun-drenched on a boulder, with her head tilted back and her hand shading her eyes, watching the flight of a bird in the sky, I recognized that she was beautiful.
At first, I couldn't make out what I was made for, but now I think it was to search out the secrets of this wonderful world and to be happy and to thank the giver of it all for devising it.
Sunday, pull through. She has taken up with a snake now. The other animals are glad, for she was always experimenting with them and bothering them. And I am glad because the snake talks. And this enables me to get a rest.
Tuesday. I think there are many things to learn yet, and by economizing and not hurrying too fast, I think they will last for weeks and weeks. I hope so.
Friday. She says the snake advises her to try the fruit of that tree, and says the result will be a great and fine and noble education. I told her there would be another result too. It would introduce death into the world. I advised her to keep away from that tree. She said she wouldn't. I foresee trouble. We'll emigrate. I have had a variegated time. I escaped last night, hoping to get clear of the park and hide in some other country before the trouble should begin. But it was not to be. As I was riding through the plain where thousands of animals were grazing, slumbering, and playing with each other according to their wont, all of a sudden there broke into a tempest of frightful noises, and in one moment the plain was a frantic commotion and every beast was destroying its neighbor. I knew what it meant. Eve had eaten that fruit and death had come into the world. I found this place outside the park and was fairly comfortable for a few days, but she found me out, and has named the place Tacoma. She says it looks like that. In fact, I was not sorry. She came because there are meager pickings here, and she brought some of those apples. Oh, I was obliged to eat them. I was so hungry. It was against my principles. But I find that principles have no real force except when one is well fed.
When I look back, the garden is a dream to me. It was beautiful, surpassingly beautiful, enchantingly beautiful. And now it is lost and I shall never see it again.
She came curtained in boughs and bunches of leaves. When I asked her what she meant by such nonsense and snatched them away and threw them down, she tittered and blushed. I had never seen a person titter and blush before, and to me it seemed unbecoming and idiotic. She said I would soon know how it was myself, and this was correct. Hungry as I was, I laid the apple down half-eaten, certainly the best one I ever saw considering the lateness of the season, and I arrayed myself in discarded boughs and branches, and then spoke with her with some severity and ordered her to go and get some more and not make such a spectacle of herself. She did it, and after this we crept down to where the wild beast battle had been and collected some skins. I made her patch together a couple of suits, proper for public occasions. Oh, they're uncomfortable, this is true. But stylish. And that's the main point about clothes.
The garden is lost, but I have found him and him, and I am content. He loves me as well as he can, and I love him with all the strength of my passionate nature, and this I think is proper for my gender.
I find she is a good deal of a companion. I see I should be lonesome and depressed without her, now that I've lost my property. Another thing, she says it is ordered that we work for our living hereafter. She will be useful. I will superintend.
If I ask myself why I love him, I find I don't know. So I suppose that this love is not a product of reasoning and statistics, like one's love for the other reptiles. I think this must be so.
Next year, we have named it Cain. She caught it while I was up country trapping on the west shore of the lake. It resembles us in some ways, and it may be a relation. This is what she thinks, but it's an error in my judgment. The difference in size warrants a conclusion that it is a different and new kind of animal. A fish, perhaps.
It is not on account of his brightness that I love him. No, it is not that. He is not to blame for his brightness, such as it is, for he did not make himself, and is as God made him, and that is sufficient. There was a wise purpose in it, that I know. In time it will develop, and I don't think it'll be quick, but there's no hurry. He's well enough.
She doesn't work Sundays, but lies around all tired out and likes to have the fish wallow over her. She makes fool noises to amuse it and pretends to chew its paws, and that makes it laugh. I've not seen a fish laugh before. This makes me doubt. I have come to like Sundays myself. Superintending all week tires a body so. There ought to be more Sundays.
It is not on account of his graciousness and considerate ways that I love him. No, he has lacks in those regards, but is well enough just so and is improving.
The perplexity augments instead of diminishing. It has ceased from lying around and goes about now on four legs. It must have been a young one when it came, for it has grown exceedingly since. It seems odd that it should be the only one. Yet, it must be so, for I have worn myself out these many weeks trying to find another one, for this one to play with. For surely it would be quieter and we could tame it more easily. Oh, I pity the poor noisy little animal. But there is nothing I can do to make it happy. I wanted to let it go, but she wouldn't hear of it. That seemed cruel and not like her.
At bottom, he is good, and I love him for that. But I could love him without it.
It is probably some kind of a bear. Bears are dangerous since our catastrophe. And I shall not be satisfied to have this one prowling about the place much longer. It makes more noise now than it ever did before, mainly at night. I have moved out, but shall go over mornings to breakfast and see if it has more teeth. If it gets a mouthful of teeth, it will be time for it to go.
It is not on account of his chivalry that I love him. No, he has lacks in those regards. He told on me. I don't blame him. It's a peculiarity of his gender, I think. And he did not make his gender. Of course, I would not have told on him. I would have perished first. But that's a peculiarity of my gender, too, and I don't take any credit for it, because I didn't make my gender either.
The bear has learned to paddle around all by itself in its hind legs and says, Papa and Mama. This indication of speech indicates that it is a new kind of bear. I will go off on a far expedition among the forests of the north and make an exhaustive search. There must certainly be another one somewhere.
He is strong and handsome, and I love him for that, and I admire him, and am proud of him. But I could love him without those qualities.
It has been a weary, weary hunt. Yet, I have had no success. In the meantime, without stirring from the home estate, she has caught another one. I never saw such luck. I must have hunted these woods 100 years. I never would have run across it.
Then why is it that I love him? Merely because he's masculine, I think. It's a matter of sex, I think.
Next day, I have been comparing the new one with the old one, and it's perfectly plain that they're of the same breed. The old one is tamer than it was. The new one is as ugly now as the old one was at first.
Yes, I think I love him because he's mine and he's masculine. There is no other reason. And so I think it is, as I first said, that this kind of love is not a product of reasoning and statistics. It just comes. No one knows whence. Cannot explain itself, and it doesn't need to.
10 years later, they are boys! We found out that long ago. It was their coming in that small, immature shape that puzzled us. We were not used to it. There are some girls now, too. Abel is a good boy, but if Cain had stayed a bear, it would have improved him. After all these years, I see that I was mistaken about Eve in the beginning. It's better to live outside the garden with her than inside without her. At first I thought she talked too much, but now I would be sorry to have the voice fall silent and pass out of my life. Blessed be the day that brought us near together and taught me to know the goodness of her heart and the sweetness of her spirit.
40 years later. It is my prayer, it is my longing, that we may pass from this life together, a longing which shall never perish from the earth, but will have a place in the heart of every woman who loves until the end of time.
Wheresoever she was, there was Eden.